You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs Program for Land's Sake. I'm your host, Bill Kite, and today our guests are Adam McCurry, Forest and Climate Director for Aspen Center for Environmental Studies, Karen Teague, she's Executive Director for Independence Pass Foundation, and Will Roche, Executive Director of Wilderness Workshop. So welcome, all of you, to the show.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Our first question is for Adam, and that is, what is the Public Lands and Water Forum, and what do you hope to accomplish with it?
Sure. So the Public Lands and Water Forum grew out of a previous effort that had kind of gone dormant called the Future Forests Roundtable, and that was a collaborative of organizations and local governments that met about three times a year to just discuss and coordinate on efforts involving public land. And with the current administration and the numerous threats and changes to public lands, we looked around and we saw a lot of the familiar faces that were part of that same organization, whether they were governments, organizations, were all doing different things to try and address some of those changes. And a group of us got together and said, hey, we should really bring back that old forum, maybe rename and reinvigorate it to coordinate on what we're doing here and how we're responding to these threats, changes, and even attacks, as Will's going to talk about. But when I say reimagine, I think the major differences, we're really trying to shift it to an action-oriented forum and group, and how do we're finding ways to work together to affect positive change on the ground for our public lands.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Adam. I appreciate it. From each of you, we'll start with you, Adam, and we'll go this way. What are the short-term and long-term effects and threats to public lands this year and in the future as things keep going, if things keep going the way they are?
Sure. And I think a lot of us have either heard about or read about a lot of the changes in the federal government. So some of those are cuts to staffing and budgets for our federal land managers. Others are changes in policies that dictate what can happen on public lands. All of those create different threats to our public lands. And when we think about our lands, we live in a pretty high elevation area that's pretty dry, and so ecologically things happen pretty slowly here, and little changes take a long time to recover from. So if we're seeing increased waste on the landscape, if we're seeing, you know, possibly worst case scenario, potential wildfires on the landscape, these things, I mean, they could be our entire lives that we're looking at. So I think the threats are really serious.
Karen?
Well said, Adam. I think the short-term effects are integrally tied up with the long-term effects, as Adam indicated. First of all, I should just say I'm going to be speaking largely from the perspective of an organization, the Independence Pass Foundation, that addresses a particular landscape, a 250,000-acre landscape east of Aspen that crosses the Continental Divide. And our mission has been to restore and protect the ecological integrity of that place. So the short-term impacts of the cuts that we're seeing to our federal land managers, specifically a Forest Service district over here that's been reduced by over a third, same on the other side of the pass, and districts that no longer have funds to take care of some of the basic needs of a landscape that's much visited by, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. So that includes things as basic as restrooms and as critical as boots on the ground. For example, let's say that we have a fire ban later in the summer. We rely on the Forest Service and their personnel to monitor that landscape. And in their absence, it's scary to think about what could happen. And so, as I say, I think the short-term impacts are less boots on the ground, less funding for all kinds of basics on a landscape like Independence Pass, with potential drastic long-term consequences. So,
thank you, Karen. Will?
Well, how much time do you have here, Bill?
Not enough.
It's a big question because we really are seeing an unprecedented kind of series of actions taken by this administration as well as Congress that, would do real and as Karen and Matt have mentioned, lasting damage to our public lands. Both of you have talked about, kind of the staffing and budget cuts, and I think that's something to pay really close attention to. Bill, as you know, as a former employee of the White River National Forest, the folks who work there are dedicated public servants, and their work is critical to protecting and stewarding and managing these places. I think that's a really good example of the long-term impacts. There's a huge amount of institutional knowledge and commitment to stewardship and restoration that, has been lost and likely will get lost. And by, reducing the budget so dramatically, the administration is essentially kneecapping those employees that remain to do good work. And that's everything from, as Karen mentioned, cleaning out toilets to planning watershed restoration projects. A great example would be something like replacing a culvert under a road that allows for fish passage and therefore restores the landscape. But it also includes things like, post-timber sale monitoring to make sure that companies are, following the guidelines in something like a timber sale so that ecological impacts are mitigated. So there's a huge bucket in that kind of cuts to people and money that, we're starting to see and we'll certainly see a lot more of. And then there's, policy changes that are coming from Washington with very little if any input from local communities. And there's too many to talk about here, but essentially the Trump administration is trying to monetize our public lands. And whether that's through, oil and gas lease sales or timber sales and logging projects, or in some cases, outright sale. There was recently an effort to sell off 500,000 acres of our public lands across Utah and Nevada that was fortunately beat back in the public lands in the budget reconciliation bill. But we know that is likely to come back in the Senate. So that sale of public lands is really real. So anyways, there's an effort to make a buck off our public lands and also to cut the public's voice out of these decision-making processes that are so crucial.
And like you said, too, the impacts are probably going to be really hard to ever overcome in the long term with budget and people gone that had the institutional knowledge there. So yeah, really want to emphasize that point.
Yeah, and incredibly short-sighted policies. If you're talking about monetizing our public lands, the value that they bring to so many communities across the West and throughout the nation is, it's extraordinary. And so so it's an interesting way of putting a value on public lands.
It's like using all the principal in your bank account in 4 years, as opposed to letting that money stay there and support you over your lifetime. Our public lands are an incredible economic driver from, both on the extractive side, but especially on, kind of the outdoor recreation industry side for, for communities in the Roaring Fork Valley. Our economies rely on these places. People come here because there's wilderness, because they can expect our land managers to be there, in kind of those direct services or more indirect ways, providing that opportunity to commune with nature. And that's a sustainable long-term investment, liquidating public lands, to the highest bidder for, speculative development, whether that's oil and gas or real estate, is simply not.
And also, people have certain expectations when they come to public lands of services. So I'm going to ask you, Will, what do you think the public, especially visitors to our area, really know about the stark realities of federal funding and cuts and the drastic reduction, really, of staffing levels on the White River National Forest?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think locally, folks in the Valley have a sense for it. The folks here care a lot about it. That's not everybody, but I think, in general, we've got a relatively informed set of folks. But I'd say, for the average visitor, they probably don't know that much. And I think it's the job of organizations like ours and media outlets like KDNK to inform folks. I've been encouraged to see a decent bit of reporting on kind of some of those crown jewels of our public lands, the national parks and places like that. But it's really important that people understand that those impacts happen, you know, across the board, you know, to places like Yosemite, as well as, you know, to the backyard campground that people love to go with their friends to go hunting or fishing on a long weekend.
You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs Program for Land's Sake. Today, our guests are Adam McCleary, Karen Teague, and Will Roche. Welcome back. And what would you like to add to that, either one of you, Adam or Karen?
Yeah, I think the public is largely aware of some of the obvious cuts. I think what's taking, like Will said, what is our responsibility as organizations that are focused on this effort and the media is to bring attention to, you know, things like there are no going to be this summer, there won't be a wildlife biologist for the Aspen Sobers Ranger District. So, you know, if we let that sink in for a minute, it's one of the biggest values for our landscape, for visitors, for residents, and as a moral obligation for us as stewards of the land, as the other living things here. And we have nobody who is monitoring that, who is doing the research and work on that. So it's concerning in a lot of ways. And that's one example. There are, you know, where that one is, there's 50, 100 more just locally. So it's hard to bring attention to all the different changes and threats and shortcomings and make people aware of those.
And it's not just us locally. I went to the BLM office, state office in Santa Fe on my way to a trip to New Mexico to do some research, and there were only three people in that office. And the head of the office, I asked him, how are you managing this? He goes, well, I don't know every day whether I have a job or not. So it's not just locally. I want people to understand that as well.
No, and I would add, we're very fortunate locally to have a number of organizations like ACES, like Wilderness Workshop, and many others who are stepping in to fill some of the really important gaps that are being left by the absence of our colleagues at the Forest Service. There are many communities that aren't going to be so fortunate. But even here in the Roaring Fork Valley, you know, there is not going to be a visitor center for anyone to step into to get a permit or ask questions.
Exactly.
On the forest. We've lost, of the 44 folks at the White River National Forest that we've lost, I think as of today, over half of them are folks who are qualified to fight fire.
Right.
We've lost them. You know, sort of on and on. So there are real impacts locally, but I think those impacts could be even more dramatic across the wider U.S.
And unfortunately, people that have been fooling with the positions in the Forest Service don't realize that everyone on the Forest Service almost has some role to do in fire. And so it's not just hiring seasonal locals. It's having people there who, like in my case, on a national incident management team. And those kind of things are gone now. So I'm really concerned about the fire season myself. And I might make a disclaimer here. I'm also a member of the Public Lands and Water Forum, just so that we make it clear on the air here.
And we're happy to have you.
Well, thank you. Will, want to add anything to that?
No, I think that I appreciate what Adam said, that there's kind of the obvious lack that folks might see, but equally or maybe even more concerning is that expertise that's being lost by the folks who do that work year in, year out to manage and steward and protect those lands.
Well, we talked a little bit about my concern about fire, but what are some of the other impacts that there'll be this summer on the public lands, wildlife, and people? Karen, you want to go first?
Sure. As I already mentioned, there are going to just be fewer boots on the ground, people who are qualified to and entitled to write tickets, make sure people aren't camping on rivers, aren't leaving human waste where it shouldn't be left, putting out campfires. So those are, you know, that's a big concern. You know, I can put on a shirt and a and you know, wear my Independence Pass Foundation hat, but I am not qualified, as I say, to enforce any of the regulations. That is up to the Forest Service. So that is a big, that's a big miss, and we are having to raise a lot of money around taking care of some of the other basic things, like keeping toilets open, cleaning and stocking them. And we're fortunate, again, to live in this community where people step up and help make that happen. But that does take away from other projects. You know, we're not going to have Youth Corps trail crews out there. Our trails are going to suffer. So there's going to be all kinds of impacts, and some of which will be obvious to the public, some a little less so. And I think it's part of our job to make sure people understand and to know that a lot of the gap filling that's happening here in the valley is not sustainable.
Exactly. And there are other nonprofit groups, the Roaring Fork Conservancy, the one that Marcia Johnson.
Forest Conservancy.
Roaring
Fork Outdoor Volunteers.
Right. And Pitkin County is also helping. And so it's just going to be a stopgap measure for sure. And I was thinking, although, you know, I can talk about poop on the radio, the poop bags that used to be, it took a couple of years to get people to used to that fact going to Conundrum Springs, that those were important. Those kind of small things get large real quick when there's nobody to take care of that. So those are just a few of the things. Adam, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, you know, I just got back from visiting Mesa Verde National Park, and when you visit a national park, there's almost always a amazing visitor center right when you get there. And Karen mentioned that there are no Forest Service offices that are open, but even when there were Forest Service offices, it's not the kind of forward mission of the Forest Service like it is the Park Service. But what we do see from the Forest Service is every employee who's out there on the ground is an educator. So the wilderness trails rangers, people out there doing maintenance, they make thousands of contacts every year and communicate with folks about what they're seeing on the forest. And for a long time, the conservation community had an assumption that if people recreated and they spent time on public land, the outdoors, they would become conservationists. And I think we've learned that that's not true. It takes more to make that turn. And so without having people communicating there on the ground, without those incidental contacts, we're really missing a huge education opportunity for all the people recreating on the White River National Forest this year.
And Adam, since you're the only scientist over there on, aside from me, in front of me, I'd like to ask, people don't realize there's a lot of information being gathered by the Forest Service that has been happening over the years that might not happen this year. So could you elucidate a little bit on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the job of a lot of the folks at the Forest Service. And you know, whether it's air pollution monitoring, which Wilderness Workshop has been super involved in, I'm sure Will can speak more to, or macroinvertebrate monitoring, which our friends at the Roaring Fork Conservancy are involved in, or vegetation monitoring in, like Will said, timber sales or post burns or the forest inventory analysis data set. When you miss pieces, when you have gaps in the data sets, there's no way to go back. Right. Once that moment passes, it's gone. And so we're really doing a disservice to our ability to both learn about forests and to have the information that we need to implement effective science-based management. And you know, beyond that, we're, as folks probably know, we're seeing really significant cuts at universities. And our university system has an incredible collaboration with the Forest Service. And so these cuts are going to impact what we're learning about our forest and impact our ability, especially with climate change, right? This, we can't depend on the knowledge that we have had. Conditions are changing. And so if we're not keeping up with the science, we are going to fail more often in our management approaches. So that's concerning.
And I know ACES has been really good about developing procedures for all sorts of things on the land that you could take measurements for, but those measurements taken without analysis and without
people sort of bird dogging watching that, it's not going to happen, is it?
No.
Well, I don't want to be all gloom and doom here, so I think it'd be really important for each of you to tell us a little bit about how the people can be involved in helping public lands and waters.
Sure, I can jump in on that. Well, I think it's really important for folks to understand that all of our voices really do matter, and that, you know, as you mentioned, Bill, the doom and gloom can sometimes feel a bit overwhelming, and I think folks, you know, understandably can feel like, gosh, does this administration really care about these things that I care about? And right. In some cases, they don't, but that doesn't mean that our voices don't matter. You know, we work a lot with our senators and elected officials in the House of Representatives, and every single staff person we talk to there, you know, reminds us how much it matters when they get contacts into their office about a particular issue. You know, phone calls are probably the best way to do that. And, you know, Wilderness Workshop as an organization has lots of information on our website about how to do that. So do lots of other nonprofits. But, you know, calling your senator and congresswoman or congressman makes a really big difference. Working with other nonprofits to kind of understand the issues and what the best way to talk about them are is a great way to make an impact. Similarly, you know, you can write letters to the editor. Our elected officials pay a lot of attention to that. Those voices add up. You know, just as a little bit of an example, I mentioned earlier that, you know, we saw this effort to sell off 500,000 acres of public lands in the budget reconciliation bill. And there was a huge amount of outcry over that. And we saw not only Democrats, but Republican members of Congress stand their ground on that. Ryan Zinke, President Trump's former Secretary of Interior, now a congressman from Montana, drew a really hard line. Our own representative, Congressman Hurd, voted against that sell-off in the committee process. And it's really clear that both of them did that because they understand where their constituents are on this issue. So,
right.
You know, make those calls. Your voice really does matter. So I'll just keep it simple. I think that's the most important way to contribute and make your voice heard.
And I think locally, we certainly can look at the divide, Thompson Divide. Exactly.
Yep.
What happened there when the public made a huge difference.
Yep.
I mean, if those public meetings, there were 400 people against it, maybe one representative.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll say, you know, we've seen a whole bunch of, you know, rollbacks of environmental protections from this administration. Fingers crossed, knock on wood, the Thompson Divide so far has not been one of those. And, you know, who knows exactly why that is, but it's, you know, it's almost for certain that that broad-based community support, those 400 people at public meetings, ranchers, mountain bikers, everybody across the political spectrum speaking up for that place, is part of why that protection is there now and why we haven't seen it go away.
Exactly. Karen, your turn.
I would add, I think it's a really wonderful opportunity for all of us to remember and feel how important our public lands are to all of us. It's probably why most of us live here. Toward that end, I would advise people to get out, enjoy them. Take it in. Feel, you know, it's easy to take our public lands for granted. We are surrounded by 5 beautiful wilderness areas. They've been well managed for years. And I think this is a great opportunity to sort of reawaken to their importance to us, how we can get involved, and to step up, whether it's with contributions to local organizations or whether, certainly, as Will said, contacting your representatives. But also, you know, come out on a birding hike. You know, just get out there and then remember that, you know, you can make a difference by, for example, picking up trash, by, you know, talking to other folks about what's going on. And these are not burdens. You know, it's a great privilege and pleasure to step up and take care of our public lands. So I think that's the positive side of what's going on.
All right, Adam.
I think don't assume that your friends, your families, your coworkers know everything that you do. If you're listening to this program right now, if you've read something about what's happening to our public lands, you're probably one of the more informed people out there. So I think the thing I've been trying to do is just relentlessly talk about it with anybody, whether it's a stranger or a coworker. Just you can lead with, like what Karen said, how much we appreciate our public lands here, and then just let people know what's going on. I think the more critical mass we can build around this, like Will was saying, it's not a partisan issue in many senses. You know, I think of the public lands that I've visited, and they are very diverse places with people of all sorts of viewpoints, from right to left. We're all using our public lands, and so people need to be made aware of what's going on, what the threats are, and what we can do to ensure that they're there not just for our lifetimes but for generations to come.
Exactly, and I like that. Don't take it for granted that we'll always have public lands, because you know what the price for freedom is eternal vigilance, and the same goes for our public lands. Any parting shots here while we have a couple minutes left?
As we're having this conversation, I keep reflecting on how easy it is to break something and how hard it is to preserve or to build something. And so we have the hard job of trying to preserve our public lands, and after this storm has passed, trying to rebuild the capacity.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Adam, Karen, and Will. You've been listening to KDNK's Public Affairs Program for Land's Sake. Join us again on July 14th and every Sunday, every second Monday of the month at 4:30 here on KDNK. Until then, whatever you do to Mother Nature, do it for land's sake.